House Labor and Commerce will come to order. It's 3:22, and I need a larger mallet. But maybe the speaker will loan me one. Today is Monday, March 18th. Present, we have Representative Chenault, Representative Heron, Representative Reinbold, Representative Josephson, Representative Millett, Representative Sadler, and myself, Chair Olson. Chair Olson. Please turn off your cell phones. We have three bills on the calendar. I think a good portion of the people in the room are familiar with all three of them, or at least two out of three. But the order we're going to be doing them in today is House Bill 76, the UI bill, Senate Bill 23, which used to be House Bill 24, the Ada LNG project, and lastly will be the film tax bill. 112.
It was House Bill 74, not 24.
Yeah, this is now Senate Bill 23. Right. So first up is House Bill 76, unemployment, and we did this bill on March 4th, again on the 13th and the 15th. We've had presentations and public testimony, and the public testimony is closed currently. So it's back to the committee. Are there any committee comments before we go into the four amendments? Seeing none. Representative Josephson, you got the first amendment. Would you like to move your amendment?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move amendment. It's 8.1 of Mr. Wayne's draft, 28GH1494.
And I'll object for purposes of discussion. Please continue.
Mr. Chairman, fundamentally, this amendment is simple, Simon, in that it just deletes Section 5, which is, I think, the only controversial section. My view of this is that the Unemployment Insurance Trust has worked well. It's never been insolvent. I asked Ms. Huff to reread a definition that defines the weighted average, I believe it was. And that definition itself includes the use of the word solvency. So solvent, this trust in part is about solvency. I think that adding Section 5, and this has nothing to do with who's pulling the trigger, it could be Commissioner Bloomer or anybody else, it's sort of irrelevant to me. It adds unnecessary risk to a program that's working. It shifts the timing of taxes, not the total amount of taxes. And I'm concerned the result may be that businesses are paying lower taxes in good times and higher taxes as they struggle to come out of recession. Additionally, the bill requires this new consultation with actuaries. And I think that we've recently had an experience relative to the PERS unfunded liability where we run into trouble sometimes with actuaries. I understand you can't universalize that all the time. But fundamentally, I just think that the system's working. When I went door to door and spoke to business people, no one ever said anything about this issue. Lastly, from the Department of Labor, I asked where Alaska is situated in the ranking of the 50 states, and someone told me that we were in the middle. We're really 34th out of 50. We pay $370 a week maximum. There is a correlation between what we pay and this formula. I can't say I fully understand it, but there's a correlation. Given our high cost of living, I think that really one issue here is are we paying adequately if we're paying $1,200, $1,300 a month for unemployment? So I move Amendment A1 for those reasons.
So any further comments? I'll maintain my objection, and could we have a vote, please?
Representative Miller?
No.
Representative Reinbold?
No.
Representative Sadler?
No.
Representative Josephson?
Yes.
Representative Chenault?
No.
Representative Heron?
No.
Chair
Olson?
No.
One yay, six nays.
The amendment fails. We have amendment number two.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I withdraw amendment number two.
and amendment number three.
I withdraw amendment number three.
Thank you. And we have amendment number four, which I believe... You have three?
Yes. And four.
Oh, I have four.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, I move amendment number four.
Object for purposes of discussion.
Mr. Chairman, amendment number four is the reason I withdrew two and three is I trotted it around and I, both sides of the issue didn't like the amendment. So I continue on with amendment number four, and basically it allows that there can be suspended in parts up to 66%, and that the commissioner cannot suspend it for more than 1/16.5% increment without a six-month period.
That's it?
Yes, sir.
Any further comments on amendment number four? Madam Clerk, I'll maintain my objection and call for the vote.
If I could, Mr. Chairman.
Oh, sure.
Can you repeat, I was distracted, can you repeat, just sort of give me another summary of the amendment?
Mr. Chairman, is that I withdrew the earlier two amendments because I shopped them around and I was in the enviable position of having both sides of the issue. Everybody didn't like the amendment, so I continue on and try to improve it. And so, yes, you can suspend it in 16.5% increments, and of course the last part of that amendment is that you have to give it at least a six-month trial before you move on to another 16.5% suspension.
Okay. Thank you.
I'll maintain my objections.
Representative Herring?
Yes.
Representative Millett?
Can you have a brief, please?
Sure. We're back on the record, and we've had a request to give us a slower rundown on your amendment. Number four. Before we vote on it.
Mr. Chairman, you wish me to try to not explain myself one more time? Or?
I'm saying we just had three different opinions on what it did. So.
Mr. Chairman, in reading the testimony and listening to the testimony, Section 5 obviously has been the point of interest. And so I talked to both sides about my amendment. Those that are opposed to the legislation in general and those that are opposed to Section 5. And so both the administration and others are opposed to it. So what I try to do is allow that every 6 months they could go up or down on these increments with a maximum of 66%. Essentially, that's it.
Do you have a volunteer from the Department of Labor that would like to come up? Welcome back.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Please state your names and affiliations for the record. And
for the record, Bryn Keith, Acting Deputy Commissioner with the Department of Labor and Workforce Development.
Paul Dick, the Director of Employment Security Division, Department of Labor.
I guess we can cut to the chase. What impact would this amendment, if it passed, have on what you were attempting to do, other than that be at a reduced...
Mr. Chairman, the bill as written allows the Commissioner of Labor limited discretion under controlled circumstances to suspend in part or in whole tax increases on unemployment insurance, again under certain circumstances. And it's certainly our opinion that further restricting that flexibility is unnecessary. And another issue that we would raise potentially by adjusting tax rates twice a year as opposed to just annually creates an additional burden on employers and certainly has administrative costs associated with it within the Department of Labor.
Any committee comments?
I have a question.
Representative Millett.
So with this amendment, what you'd be doing is you would be looking back every 6 months at the adjustment rate. And by discretion, every 6 months, you could adjust the rate. Is that what this amendment would do?
Representative,
be a look back? It would be a look back?
Through the chair, Representative Millett, I believe so. That's how I interpret it, okay. Yes.
And follow up? And currently, we do a look back of 1 year? I mean, if this bill passed, it would be a look back of 1 year?
Yes, Representative Millett.
Okay. Thank you. I just didn't understand the timing.
Anybody else? With that, I'll maintain my objection and could we have a vote, please?
Representative Herron?
Yes.
Representative Miller?
No.
Representative Weinbold?
No.
Representative Sadler?
No.
Representative Josephson?
Yes.
Representative Chenault?
No.
Chair Olson?
No. With that, the amendment fails, and we're going to take a real brief at ease. We're back on the record. A conceptual amendment was distributed to the members. Since then, we have a CS that incorporates the change that was made by that amendment. Can I have a motion to adopt the CS?
I move CS House Bill 76 version /N as the working document.
And I'll object for purposes of discussion. Conrad Jackson from my staff will explain the CS.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, Conrad Jackson, staff to Representative Olson and to the Labor and Commerce Committee. The CS you have before you should be version N. I hope that is a version you have. We have found some minor typos in the drafting of the, actually in the original bill. Some of those were corrected. We found a few more in the original CS, which would have been version U. Now we have version N before you. If everybody would double check, make sure we're all working from the same sheet of music. The biggest change in version N is on the last page, page 6, line 4, section 10, which repeals the section 5 of the bill, which is creating the most controversy. The intent here is to give the department some time to see what is going on with the adjustments. If, as one member has phrased it to me, if the system tanks, even if we do have a quote-unquote terrible commissioner, as was somewhat alluded to, it goes away in 5 years, period.
I think the intent was if we had a major economic crisis, loss of a number of jobs, but yeah, I'd like to go on the record. Shortly after we gaveled in, we had three legislators come in. I think Representative Tammy Wilson was the first, Representative Mike Harker was the second, and Representative Isaacson was the third. Did I miss anybody? I can't see the back row. So I think I got everybody. Welcome. But you're not here on this bill, are you?
Mr. Chairman, I think as the members go through the CS, they will notice an addition. There's a whole new page 3 to the bill. As I think everyone in the room knows, when a bill is drafted initially by the Department of Law, they do a great job, but our folks across the street in Ledge Legal, that's how they make their bread and butter. They have a great team of lawyers and reviewers that review this and find all of the nits to pick. They've cleaned things up. We do have one issue. If you notice on page 2, line 13, there is a citation that refers to the unemployment trust fund account, AS 2320-135A. In the first CS that was drafted, there was a typo. They actually referred to small B2, which is incorrect. I would ask that the members consider adopting
conceptual amendment 2, which is an amendment to this CS that would correct the same typo as it appears on page 5, line 14, and page 6, line 1.
I move conceptual amendment number 2.
Is there any objection? Seeing no, we'll move it. Any questions for Mr. Jackson while he's at the table? Thank you, Conrad. That brings the bill back to the committee, and I will...
Sorry, the conceptual amendment was to the work doc, to version N?
Yeah.
Page 4, on line 25.
I see the new table.
Page 5, right?
Okay. Page 4, on line 25. Page 4, line 25.
This is conceptual
amendment. No. Page 5. Brief it is. We're back on the record, and I think we have the bill as amended before us now. And is there any committee comments on the bill as amended? Representative Schnell.
Mr. Chairman, just so I'm sure that I didn't miss anything, conceptual amendment number 1 was...
Two.
Was approved?
Conceptual amendment number 2, yeah.
No, conceptual amendment number 1.
One is in the new CS.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, for the record, Conrad Jackson. I apologize for the confusion. I had a bad feeling that that was going to happen. CS number 1 is what generated the new CS, except that the new CS was replaced with a newer CS. Then conceptual amendment number 2 fixes some typos in the newest new CS. Is that?
I hope it's as clear as mud.
Yeah, it is.
Okay.
It's about as cloudy as my head is.
And I would like to go on the record as saying that now you're seeing some of the effects of the 90-day session instead of 120 days to have a little more adequate time to do this, and I apologize. But having said that, the bill as amended is back for the committee. Any comments? I'll entertain a motion.
Okay. I move committee substitute House Bill 76, version N, from committee as amended with individual recommendations and attached fiscal note.
And I'll object, and with respect, Mr. Chairman.
Certainly. Roll call, please.
Yes.
Representative
Herring?
Yes.
Representative Miller?
Yes.
Representative Butler?
Yes.
Representative Josephson?
No.
Chair Wilson?
Yes.
Six
the bill passed out of committee and on to finance, I believe. And with that, we'll take a brief at ease to finish up the paperwork. On the record, and if you thought you were confused by the last bill, I think this one will set a new bar that will be hard to beat. Senate Bill 23 is the companion bill to the House Bill 74, which all the people in the room from Fairbanks recognize as bills that started out together on the same time and pretty much on the same page. The Senate bill became the vehicle because it came across first, and we will be hearing Senate Bill 23 for the first time today, although we've heard House Bill 74 several times and have taken several hundred public testimonies. We will open this up to a real brief public testimony because it is virtually the same bill. And I think everybody's from Fairbanks has had the time to go through it. And what we did for the people that might not be familiar with what happened, we ended up with two bills. House Bill 23 now is the ADA bill. And House Bill 74 is the what was probably 15 pages of ADA bill, or a number of pages. Senate Bill 23 is the Fairbanks gas line project, or natural gas project. It's much easier to manage as two different bills. We anticipate that House Bill 74 will be back up for us in a week. We're waiting for the final draft on that, and we will get it out to everybody. So basically, as one of my staff members has aptly put it, we split the baby down the middle on this one, and we're going to hear Senate Bill 23 today with the intention of hopefully getting it out and on the road today. But with that, not yet. I believe we have Ada here. Come on up, guys and ladies, whoever's who's ever in trouble today and has to do it. What?
What CS are we looking at?
CS.
Let's adopt the Senate Bill 23.
That's what I was going to do.
Okay. Oh. Okay. I move House Bill Committee Substitute for Committee Substitute for Senate Bill 23 version / as a working document.
I'll object for purposes of discussion. And before us, we have Ada to briefly describe the bill since we've had them do this probably four times already.
Yes. To the chair, this is Ted Leonard. I'm the executive director of ADA. And
Sarah Fisher-Goode, executive director of the Alaska Energy Authority.
And this must be a good bill because you've been very patient and come back and forth a number of times.
And we appreciate the House hearing this bill again, Chair. Very briefly, the House CS for Senate Bill number 23 does take out the direct financing language, leaving the language for the dividend calculation for ADA and the gas project. And we have revised the fiscal note to show the reduction from the CS, the direct language, leaving the fiscal note that deals with the dividend and with the gas project. And there is no change to the dividend language or the gas language that was in House Bill 74. It's the same with SB 23, and we're here to answer any questions that the Labor and Commerce Committee would have.
Sir, do you have any comments that you'd like to add as well before we start throwing out questions?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I actually have nothing. I'm here for nothing to add to the comments right now. I'm just here for questions.
And I'd like to acknowledge that the committee believes that Fairbanks does have a crisis, and the thing that we were waiting for we finally got just a few days ago, and that was the Senate bill. And we figured that the fastest way to expedite this was to have a vehicle that already cleared the other body. And people in the Senate have been advised of what's going on as well. So in case anybody thought we're smoke and mirrors, I'd like to say it was, but it wasn't. Anyway, any questions for Ada? Representative Reinbold.
Okay, first of all, as you know, I don't represent Fairbanks, even though Gavel to Gavel has said for a while that I was from Fairbanks in the little note under my name, which kind of surprised me. Someone pointed it out recently. Thank you, Don, for pointing that out. But anyway, it's now changed. But although I was born in Fairbanks, and so was my husband, we definitely are compassionate about that you guys do have energy issues there. However, I'm going to ask a few questions in regards to that, because when I took oath of office, I believe that it's my responsibility to look out for the long-term fiscal health of our state. So starting with that, I'm going to go ahead and ask my committee members, my fellow committee members, to look at these two charts. One is the blue and red chart, and one is the Division of Public Assistance Benefits by Consensus Area. So first of all, I'm going to make just a comment. Does everyone have the two charts in front of them? I went around and passed them out right before committee.
Secretary gets copies?
Okay. So if you look at these two charts, for fiscal year 13, the State Division of Public Assistance spent $3,389,944 in Fairbanks alone. It is clear that our state does need a comprehensive and sustainable energy plan for our constituents. With the implementation of the LNG trucking Fairbanks, when can we expect to see the numbers of these state subsidies decline? That's a comment that I would like. Maybe you guys aren't the right people to answer that, but we are subsidizing Fairbanks quite a bit right now through LIHEAP.
So that will be a comment, you know, that's just something I'm going to be following, and maybe I'll ask the Division of Public Assistance if relief comes to Fairbanks. We should be able to see, you know, a reduction in LIHEAP in Fairbanks. With that, I'm going to go ahead and ask two other questions. In the current legislation, will the project sponsors be able to secure long-term gas contracts with industrial users and utilities to ensure that this investment is recouped? The goal of my question is to ensure that SET's loan is not in jeopardy by not securing long-term gas contracts.
Yeah. Sure. Through the chair to Representative Reinbold. Yes, part of the process that we will go through in completing the feasibility study and as we go forward to before we do the SETS loan would be to secure long-term contracts with the utilities that would use the gas from this project. So part of giving that loan, we will have to have those contracts in place.
Through the chair, I would like to follow up. Is that a 5-year, a 10-year, a 20-year? What do you consider long-term contracts?
Through the chair to Representative Reinbold, I would believe what we've talked about with, for example, Fairbanks Natural Gas, they're looking at least a 15-year. So it would be in the 10 to 15-year range. But until we go through the process and know what is needed for the SETS loan and the amortization, we won't know for the exact term of those contracts. But before we can move forward, ADA is always on its projects. We'll have customers that will utilize the project to guarantee our financing.
I'd like to cut in and recognize that Steve Thompson, Representative Steve Thompson, has joined us from Fairbanks as well. And Reneva Moss, who has been here so long that we consider her to be a legislator most of the time. Anybody else? Did I miss anybody? Nope. Please continue. Oh,
thank you very much. Okay, so basically, like I stated, if the gas line, you know, is constructed, you said that this LNG facility can be repurposed to supply new industrial users and to serve rural Alaska. And I just wanted to ask, do you know if a feasibility study has been conducted to ensure that this will be economically sound and a possible venture?
Through the chair to Senator, Representative Reinbold, excuse me. We are in the process of doing that. We have just finished hiring Northern Economics to start looking at that. But again, that will be part of the process that we have to complete before we would have our board approve the project. So looking at that long-term demand is very important in the fact of being able to move when the pipeline comes into play, that we will have that demand. And Sarah, would you like to add to that?
Through the chair, Representative Reinbold, I think Ted has actually covered it quite well. The expectation is that after the pipeline is in, that there would be additional industrial customers that would continue to be able to utilize this. I think some of the mining districts in particular would be an area of which they not only need electrical generation for remote mining, they also need liquid fuel for trucks. So that is one area. In addition, we are working on our rural energy programs to make sure that the project and the components are able to be used to produce liquid fuel for areas that would be on the river system and then also on the more rural road system. So our anticipation is definitely this project will be used beyond pipeline time, that it would be able to be used in areas that would not be served by a pipeline.
Okay, can I wrap up?
Yep.
Okay, so basically I'm just going to summarize my concerns. Although I had about 20 questions, I'm just leaving it to those three right now. Basically, I just want to ensure that if this project does move forward, that we can anticipate a decrease in the LIHEAP, the low-income energy assistance. Second, ensure long-term contracts so we as a state should be able to recoup a good investment on that loan, that SETS loan. I don't want that investment jeopardized. And three, a feasibility study
for that long, that the so that the project can be repurposed. You know, my whole goal of stating all this is we need a long-term energy plan for the entire state, and just want to make sure, you know, that that we keep our good bond ratings and that all the pieces fit together in unison.
Thank you. And I guess through the chair, Representative Reinbold, the Alaska Energy Authority has been working very, very closely with the regions of the state to make sure that we develop the regional energy plans in order to address the energy needs. I think one thing that's very certain with respect to Alaska is that what will work in the Rail Belt area and even in the Fairbanks area isn't necessarily something that could work in Southeast Alaska. So we do take a look at these issues regionally. And I did want to just reflect on the record, the LIHEAP program is not something that the Alaska Energy Authority is involved in. We do run the Power Cost Equalization Program, which is not something that's served in the Fairbanks area. Golden Valley Electric Association is not an eligible utility. So LIHEAP is something that should perhaps be addressed through the Health and Social Services. And I believe that's a statewide program that's based upon income, not necessarily the cost of energy in an area, but it's more of an income-related program. And that's as much as I can say with respect to the LIHEAP program.
Can I respond?
Respond.
Okay, and I understand that. My whole point is if we're going to invest and create relief in Fairbanks, you would assume that the energy costs are going to go down. Is that correct?
Through the chair, yes, Representative Reinbold.
Right, and so you would assume, you know, that this is more affordable, you know, for the people, you know, the gas. And I could go into very much detail about this public assistance, how we switched it from 150% of federal poverty then to 225. If oil prices go up, it's 250. We backfilled 1.4 million because the federal funding didn't come through. Then we gave another 5 million of additional.
No, this is probably not the forum to.
Right. Okay. So I, you know, it's just.
I think there are a number of people that agree with you, but I don't think this is the time or the place. Thanks.
Okay.
Any further questions? Representative Chenault, followed by Representative Herron.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ted or Sarah, could either one of you comment on the new CS? And I guess the cleanest way to ask the question is, does the new CS have any negative effects on ADA moving forward with the Fairbanks trucking project in itself?
Through the chair to Speaker Chenault, no, it does not.
Okay. And, you know, and I guess I just want to say that this is an opportunity to try to help out the folks in Fairbanks. A number of us have listened to Fairbanks, and we've listened to other areas of the state, but this is a project that if it moves forward on a timeline and the numbers work out, and I'm no different than anyone here. I had a number of questions that relate to the actual project itself that ADA doesn't have the answers to right now, such as where is it going to be located, what's it going to cost, you know. And until they can do a feasibility study and determine what those numbers are, and then they can move forward with the project if the numbers work out, I've kind of drew back quite a bit in not my negativity to the bill, but just to the questions that I had. So after I kind of regrouped and thought about it as far as what this bill actually does, I'm fairly comfortable with ADA moving forward with this bill and being able to look at those costs and see if they can't come up with a project that helps Fairbanks out as soon as they can. I don't believe that this in any way is in competition with any other energy project out there, whether it's the in-state gas line or whether it's a big gas line. I don't see where there's any conflict there. So I'm more than willing to support it and try to help the folks out in Fairbanks, and in turn that gives us other opportunities for doing other things with other areas so that don't currently have we keep calling it low-cost energy in the Cook Inlet, but it's not necessarily low-cost energy. It's just lower than some other areas of the state have. So with that, Mr. Chairman, that's probably all I will say about the bill. I do agree with Representative Reinbold that we have I think the whole total number on that page is $341 million in assistance. And while ADA doesn't certainly really play into effect there, that's a lot of money yearly that we're sending out, and most of that's in some form of energy assistance. And if we just had that money to be able to apply to projects, maybe we could come up with a long-term energy supply for most of the areas. But because of the size of the state we are, that's just a tough battle to get everyone the cheapest energy we can. What I can tell you is that without projects like this or others, that we don't have any opportunities, and we'll continue to pay a high price for fuel anywhere in the state. So I'm willing to try to move forward and see if we can't come up with a project that helps out the interior folks. Mr. Chairman.
Representative Heron.
Yeah. Mr. Chairman, I don't know who could answer this. It's a question to the CS. Section 4, could someone explain the meaning of the change in line 1? That's page 12 of Section 4. Excuse me. Section 4, line 12, the first sentence. What does that mean?
Through the chair to Representative Heron. This is dealing with setting up the capital reserve for the state moral obligation. The change on line 12 is just to replace chairman with chair and not with no. It's more of a legality. But the whole section is dealing with the moral obligation of the state in allowing ADA to set up a capital reserve for this that provides that backing of the state for this credit. So, and it's supposed to change, estimated, would take a investment grade up to a high investment grade and could change the amount of basis points by about, I think it was 175 to 200 basis points in lowering the cost of the bond.
So that would give you a AAA rating?
It will give it could be a rating or two below that, Chair, just based on the AAA is what the state has, and then when you do a moral obligation, you still have to look at the bond, but it does give it that boost that it would not have had if it was being based on just a revenue bond for a utility. So it would bring it up, hopefully, into the AA to AA plus.
Representative Heron, follow-up?
Mr. Chairman, just more of a comment that will follow the speaker's comments is that I've told my Fairbanks colleagues that I'll be supportive of this legislation because I want us to do something. We've talked about gas projects and reduction in energy costs for a long, long time, and so maybe this is the closest one to that. But I think in more of a broader comment is that the state's huge. Four Dam Pool was a huge subsidy. Cooking gas was a huge subsidy. This is going to be a huge subsidy. And in the future, maybe other parts of the states will enjoy large subsidies to get energy costs. And so it does make sense to do something. And hopefully this will work out. If not, we'll just have to do something else. But thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Millett, followed by Representative Josephson.
Thank you. I was just in the fiscal note, so you're going to do a energy plan specifically for Fairbanks with the liquefaction project in mind. Is that what that second paragraph says? Interior energy plan.
Through the chair, Representative Millett, the interior energy plan has been the it's been the term used to really title this financing package that is put together that's found in the capital budget and also the authorizations provided to ADA in Senate Bill 23.
Okay. And just through the chair, I am co-chair of the Energy Committee. We get criticized often about not having an energy plan for the whole state. And so you know, there is not one single solution that fits our entire state anywhere. What's right for Anchorage?
One size doesn't fit all.
One size does not fit all. And that has been the fundamental problem that we have had since the time that I've been in the legislature of coming up with a statewide energy plan. So I think it's a good idea for the Interior to move forward on something that they deem that will work for them. And it may not, you know, be palatable for us that live in Anchorage or palatable for people that live in Southeast, but the state has historically always put the bill for large-scale energy programs or projects in this state. There has been no private sector energy provider at all. We have subsidized electrical utilities. We've done a multitude of things. And so I don't think anybody wants to be on LIHEAP or on PCE. I think that's a position nobody wants to be in. I'm not, you know, this is a lot of money to do, but I think the Interior has sat long enough waiting for a solution, and this is a start to something that could generate, you know, some energy opportunities for Fairbanks. And once we get energy to Fairbanks, that just opens up more job opportunities for people to get off of low income. So I don't think it's, you know, I don't think it's a panacea for everything, but I do believe that you cannot expect people to get off LIHEAP without a job. You can't have good jobs without energy, and that's my problem here, is that we keep talking about our public assistance, and we don't have an energy plan, but this is a start for Fairbanks, so I'm going to support this. It may or may not work, but, boy, we sure need to get started on making sure that this energy-rich state is actually energy anemic when it comes to providing sustainable energy for our citizens. So with that, Mr. Chair.
Representative Josephson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess for Ms. Fisher Goad, when did you first get the CS? When did you first see the CS?
Through the chair, Representative Josephson, this weekend.
Okay. And may I continue, Mr. Chairman?
Pardon me?
Can I just continue with a few questions here?
Yeah.
Okay. I see that the CS excises, deletes six pages of text. I can tell that the first section is sort of not particularly important. It looks like uncodified language almost to me, where it talks about purposes and findings and that sort of thing. Do you agree with that?
Well, through the chair, Representative Josephson, I think a lot of when the committee removed the direct financing program, when the committee removed that, there were a lot of conforming amendments that I think included direct financing. If I recall, I don't have it in front of me, but I recall a lot of those changes were just to conform other sections of the bill by removing that direct financing program.
Okay. The fiscal note at the bottom of page 2 says that you'd get $125 million from SET's direct financing. Is that removed because it's all you're comfortable it's in the operating budget and you'll get it through that mechanism?
Through the chair, Representative Josephson, the fiscal notes, the one fiscal note that changed was the ADA fiscal note shows in the first column the $750,000 services request. The other fiscal note I think still stands, however, it wasn't needed to change. Again, the direct financing program doesn't involve the Interior Energy Plan, so that being removed from the bill doesn't impact the $125 million. That fiscal note stands as is. It's really informational. It adjusts the that fiscal note does is in the column that shows included in Governor's FY14 request, it shows $125 million. Mm-hmm. Again, it's really for informational purposes, and the additional changes, again, did not affect the Interior Energy Plan.
So what the Senate passed out unanimously, 18-0, what's been omitted from that is no concern to you at all?
Through the chair, yes, Representative Josephson, that was an ADA adjustment, and I believe Ms. Chairman Olson had suggested that I believe that's going to remain. Help me out, Ted. I think it's the other bill.
HB 74.
HB 74.
Thank you.
And that's where the fiscal note is.
Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. The changes of the CS will change your rating from a potential AAA to something less?
Through the chair, Representative Josephson, no. What I think Mr. Leonard was discussing was in the, based upon the question from Representative Herron, was the moral ob. Typically, when a moral obligation is put on to a bond, you don't receive the rating from the entity. You receive a rating that's one or two notches below the entity that's providing the moral obligation. Because, again, it's not a general obligation of the state of Alaska. It's a different type of circumstance.
So I guess to conclude, your agency is content with this bill. If this was the bill that was passed and signed by the governor, you would be content with that?
Through the chair, Representative Josephson, yes, it fulfills the needs of the Interior Energy Plan as testified. Now, the direct financing program, I think that's something that Mr. Leonard will be discussing further with respect to the committee on the impacts of the direct financing program and the benefits that the program can bring as an ADA bill. And that, for the record, unless there's something specific related to energy policy or the Alaska Energy Authority, we wouldn't be involved in that bill.
I see. So it would be a standalone bill is what you're talking about?
Yes.
I don't have any other questions.
And it has the same number it had when we started. It's just a little smaller.
Okay.
Representative Sadler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Fair amount of numbers running around. I just want to clarify the page 3, line 18, reference to the Capital Reserve Fund. How much money is in that fund? Which is that money? Is that the $125 million? Help me understand what the Capital Reserve Fund is.
Through the chair to Representative Sadler, the Capital Reserve Fund will be set up for this specific bond as we move forward. So there is no money until we actually issue a bond. And then usually what a capital reserve is 1 year's worth of debt service. So it will depend on the size of the bond issued. And this bond may be issued in a series. As you build out the distribution system, you would use a portion of the $150 million for the first series, then the second portion. So what this just states is that ADA will set up a capital reserve fund for the debt service for this bond. And what can happen if somehow, which we believe will never happen, is that if there is not enough revenue to pay back the bond, then the chair of ADA would ask the legislature to appropriate money to fill up that capital reserve bucket, that 1 year bucket. And again, that would only be if there wasn't enough revenue to make debt service payments. Again, that is would be very unlikely. ADA would make sure that that would not happen. But that's what a capital reserve is. And it's a moral obligation because the legislature does not have to appropriate the money. But to be honest, that's something that the state would not do either because they would not want to impinge on their moral obligations, so they would probably fill the bucket. But again, we are looking at ways to ensure that would never happen and to have a second layer of credit to back that moral obligation.
So again, as you issued each series of bonds, the size of that capital reserve fund would have to increase.
To the annual debt service.
And what's the original source of the capital reserve?
It would be the bond proceeds itself.
So you would take a little bit off of that.
Right.
Okay. Does that mean there's a little bit of money at the end you got to make up for somehow?
Well, you usually use that to make the last bond payment at the end.
Behind you. Okay.
Any further questions for ADA? Thanks again.
Thank you.
With that, we're going to open up very limited public testimony, and that's assuming that everybody would like the bill to move today. So I think we'll start out in the room. Is there anybody that cares to testify in the room? Seeing none, we have one gentleman online from Fairbanks who has not previously testified to the best. Well, he hasn't testified on this bill. Tim Gunderson, are you with us?
Thank you.
Seeing nobody in Fairbanks again for the second time, and I won't say that. With that, we will close out public testimony, and I will remove my objection to adopting the CS and bring it back to the committee for discussion. Representative Schnell.
Mr. Chairman, really no discussion. I think that this bill gives the opportunity for ADA to move forward, look at the project to bring LNG in a shorter amount of time by trucking it to Fairbanks, and the other opportunities that that might bring for other communities. So, Mr. Chairman, if there's no other comments, I'll make a motion if you're interested in the motion.
Sounds good to me. Anybody else want to?
Just very briefly, with thanks to the speaker and to you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, you know, if this were happening, if these kind of prices were happening in South Central Alaska, it wouldn't be tolerated. And the prices are as high as they are for diesel oil because, and fuel oil, because we're at $120 a barrel. That's why. You combine that with the non-attainment issues on air quality, and the fact that this is, compared to other large projects like the Susitna Dam or a pipeline, this is quite inexpensive. I think this is a good investment, and the people of the North Star Borough are worthy of it, and so I'm going to support it.
Representative Herron.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Again, I talked to our gregarious colleague from Badger Road that today is that listening to all the testimony from her constituents and the residents of Fairbanks is they're sincere, they're scared, and they need help, and we're ready to give them help. But I hope in the future, when there's other projects around the state that need help, and those people are scared as well, that the Fairbanksans remember 2013.
Representative Schnell.
Mr. Chairman, before I make a motion to move the bill, I would like to make sure that people do know that when we talk about energy prices, they're just not high in Fairbanks, or they're just not high in rural Alaska. The price for a gallon of diesel fuel on the Kenai Peninsula is more than it is in Fairbanks. When we talk about what the anticipated cost for this LNG project, somewhere, I think it's $13, $15 is what they're expecting. Just this year, there were short-term contracts let in the Cook Inlet for $15 on MCF gas for short-term through the coldest part of winter. So we are there. And you know, the Cook Inlet is while we do receive a break on natural gas right now, over 50% of the people that live in the Cook Inlet are not on a gas distribution grid of any kind. They heat with propane, diesel, coal, and wood. We're fortunate that we probably have more wind, and I know that's hard to believe, but we have more wind on the Kenai and in Anchorage than the Fairbanks folks do. And so that's why they have the stale air they have. So but I'll leave that to your own imagination, Mr. Chairman. But if you're ready for a motion, I'll make a motion.
I would love a motion.
Mr. Chairman, I make a motion that we move Senate Bill 23, which is 28-GS1738/0 Bailey, 315 of 13, from committee with individual recommendations and the attached fiscal notes.
Seeing no opposition, the bill will move out of committee and on to finance. And with that, we'll take a break at ease. On the record, next up is House Bill 112. We first heard this bill on Wednesday. On Friday, we opened it up to public testimony, and we kept it open for public testimony. We got a lot of people signed up, but I think I will start out in the room. We've got two people signed up in the room at least. We'll go in order they signed up. Dave Hussaker. Welcome, and thank you for your patience, and I hope you enjoyed the previous two bills.
I didn't understand a single thing that went on. That's all right. Very happy to be here, and I'm happy to add my words to the many you've already heard already. My name's Dave Hunsaker. I've lived in Alaska for 40 years now, and I work as a screenwriter, so I divide my time between here in Juneau and Hollywood, and go back and forth a lot, and have been doing that for about the past 25 years. And prior to that, I worked in theater, and still do sometimes with Perseverance Theater. And I was the artistic director of something called the Nakahiti Theater, which we used to have here in Juneau and tour all over. So I just wanted to say that I think the film incentive program has been a very good one, and it's just getting started, and it generated a lot of interest in Hollywood. I have a project, The Firecracker Boys, which is based on Fairbanks writer Dan O'Neill's book about Project Chariot, and it's funded and ready to go. The producer of that one is Leonardo DiCaprio, and the director is Bronwyn Hughes. And they're in the process of casting it now, and while the budget doesn't permit the whole production to be in Alaska, they've come up and done location shoots, already spent quite a bit of money hiring location scouts all over, not all over the state, but to the places where it could be feasible. And they're intending to shoot about 30% of the picture here. And that wouldn't be the case if it weren't for the incentive program. So what has prevented more productions from coming up here so far has been the lack of trained technical personnel. But this, too, is changing, and we're seeing more and more people. With every production that comes here, there are more people that have experience. So while a lot of the money gets paid to people from outside Alaska at this point, the more projects we have shot here, the more we'll stay in Alaska and the bigger base we'll have. I also think that everything that's shot in Alaska is going to be shot in Alaska as they discover not only the grandeur but the superior lighting that we have up here, and certain things that they can't really get other places. There are, at present in Canada, which is our huge competitor, no good Arctic locations that have the kinds of things a film crew needs. In Alaska, with Barrow and Nome, we've got something that's close to that. Canada has always, as I say, has always been our competitor. Canada is coming on incredibly strong. We were, with the Firecracker Boys, we were given a formal presentation. People came down from both the BC Film Office and the Calgary, or Alberta. And that's where Alaska has been shot. Many things have been passed off as Alaska, and I feel that if people see the real Alaska, it's going to make them more prone to want to come here, and that anything shot up here is going to be a good ad for Alaska. So thank you very much.
Any questions? Thanks again.
Thank you.
And Patricia Hall, please join us. Alaska Film Group, please state your name and affiliation for the record.
My name is Patricia Hall, and I live at 400 East here in Juneau. I moved to Alaska in 1967. I have 31 cumulative winters under my belt, and I'm here today representing the Alaska Film Group. I'm a performing artist in music and theater and television and film, and the Alaska Film Group is a nonprofit trade organization for individuals and businesses that are involved in film and video industry in Alaska. And among its activities, the film group encourages the workforce development so that Alaska men and women can be hired into the well-paying crew jobs, and also they're very active in the development of infrastructure to support film production. Alaska is a really compelling place to make movies, and we have dramatic locations, especially abundant summer daylight that Dave alluded to. However, there are beautiful locations elsewhere, and including New Zealand and New Mexico, both of which aggressively court the film industry. New Mexico even offers loans. And then there's Canada, and in many ways, it's our twin. And when the Canadian dollar was strong, it was really easy to keep films on this side of the border. But now that we're 98 cents to the Canadian dollar, we're at a really precarious balance point. And eliminating the film incentive program at this point, we would lose our competitive advantage completely. Films that would normally come to Alaska will instead go to Canada. And in fact, I've heard of a film now that is about the serum run in Nome, and it's going to be shot in Canada. There's a chilling effect that has taken place because of the risk of this incentive going away. When the 10-year commitment was made, that made people think big and long-term and really start to put their irons in the fire. But now that is not the case. On July 13th, there were going to be a number of enhancements to the incentive program that would have gone into effect. That would have included cabinet-level review of the projects for content to ensure that the best interests of the state and its residents are reflected in those films. An application fee, which is a sliding scale to defray administrative costs, and that is based on the budget's ground spend. So it's going to be anywhere from $200 to $5,000 just to apply. And then the incentive to hire Alaskan residents is increased from 10% to 20%. They get more money, they get more a tax credit if they hire more Alaskans. And it is reducing the non-resident funding. So we're trying to tweak this thing and really make it work. I'd just like to say that creative industries like film are the wave of the future. There's no red tape. There's none of the difficulties of other industries. Film companies leave things better than they find them. And one major production company in Anchorage needed a soundstage. They created one, $6 million investment. That is not reflected in the incentive plan, but that is now Alaskan infrastructure. So I would encourage you to please let the wisdom of the 27th legislature move forward.
Any questions for Ms. Hall? Thanks again for joining us today. We're going to go up to the Anchorage LI. Is there anybody else in the room that would care to testify? With that, I think we'll go up to Anchorage and start out with Richard Benavides, whose name I recognize from a number of places, but most recently is being on the list, and we weren't able to get to him last week. Richard, are you with us?
Yes, I am. Thank you. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Okay, great. Thank you for letting me testify. And I have my...
Oh, come on. You know the drill, Richard. Name and affiliation.
Okay, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Richard Benavides, and I'm testifying in opposition of HB 112. I serve as the president of IOTC Local 918, which is the union that represents both stage and film and television technicians. But let me make it clear that IOTC 918 supports anyone, union, non-union, who work on films. We're not here just to do things just for ourselves. We're part of the film community. The Film Incentive Program has positively impacted our organization in the following manners. Over the course of this program, over half of our members have worked making good wages on several film or television projects. Ones that you may recognize are Everybody Loves Wales. We had approximately 160 members work on that. Frozen Ground, we had 90. And we've also been involved, along with the University of Fairbanks, in training over 250 individuals, both in Fairbanks and in Alaska. And the trainings that took place at the UAA television studio, things like Grip for Film and Electrics for Film, were also streamed statewide so that folks who couldn't come to take those classes in person were able to follow along via video, and actually that's still available for folks to download and be able to stream through the university. We also are getting ready to do some courses this summer. As a matter of fact, there's going to be a student film made with the University of Fairbanks students in their film program that will utilize technicians from across the state so that the students actually learn how to make a film. And they will be helped along by folks in Alaska who are already trained in film so that they would know what to do on an actual film. So they'll do a film literally from the beginning to the end, and they will learn all the different aspects of making film, both technical and on the acting side, both. One of the things I want to mention is I looked at the, and I'm sure you have that in front of you, I looked at the film... the film office's report to the legislature. And if you look at what the film incentive program is about and what they put in their five bullet points, I'll just talk about the four real quick. It says cooperate with organizations in the private sector for the expansion and development of industry in the state, promote Alaska as a location for productions, provide production assistance by connecting folks with Alaska contractors, suppliers, and workers, and certify internship programs and promote the employment of interns by eligible people. Now, you could insert the word oil or any other industry in this state, and these are the things we always talk about. Since I worked in the legislature over and over again, the mantra has always been, we need to diversify the economy, we need to diversify the economy. Now, I'm just asking you to think about, why would you destroy a fledgling industry that is showing positive growth and fills that need and helps to do what we all need to be done, which is diversify the economy. So I ask you to look at this, look at everything that's occurred, look at the fact that it's growing, look at the fact that it is thus far very positive, and I ask you to please, please vote against this piece of legislation. Thank you.
Thanks again, Richard. Good hearing from you.
Well, thank you.
Next up, off-net, we have Irene Bedard. Are you with us, Irene?
Hello, can you hear me?
Yeah, you're coming through fine. Please state your name and affiliation for the record, and thank you for joining us today.
Thank you. Thank you for listening. My name is Irene Bedard. I'm the president of Sleeping Lady Films, Waking Giants Productions. I'm an Alaska native born and raised in our great state, and it's been my honor to have made my career as an actor in over 45 productions in the film and television industry. I am so happy to say that, you know, I'm someone who has worked on the international stage, but it's my home that's always held my heart. Alaska is where I'm from. And last year I incorporated Sleeping Lady Films, Waking Giants Productions in Anchorage, and it's an Alaska Native majority-owned company. Our minority partner and CEO, Tom Denemy, is from Canada. Mr. Denemy has expressed great interest in the beauty and the rich culture of Alaskan people. But for an entrepreneur and an international producer, it was our film tax incentives that made starting a company here a sound business decision. And it's been our mission and vision to show Alaska in all its beauty, all of its grandeur, to show the strength and the integrity of our people, to tell the stories that are uniquely Alaskan-made. And the project that we've slated would provide continuous work for Alaskans and create a unique opportunity to train and develop the workforce and infrastructure needed. But the thing that is, I think, very key, and it's what happened in Vancouver as well, in order to get the workforce infrastructure going and moving, is to have a series of televisions projects moving along so that there's always a workforce that gets trained, gets interned, and then develops into a very strong group of people who could be used from on the international stage. Our strategic development, we've traveled throughout the United States and Canada and have made connections all around the world as far as Europe, Asia, South Africa, and all the while we've been ambassadors of goodwill for the burgeoning industry in Alaska that could and should be. Not only does this industry create new work and business for Alaskans, but it is also the best overall public relations for tourism, and that brings Alaska to an international stage on a whole level. This, in my opinion, is a great missed growth opportunity for the state of Alaska if this bill goes through. I'm deeply saddened to say that it is not a good business decision to keep my company here if it does go through, and that would be a great loss to our state. I would like to read a statement from my CEO, Canadian producer Tom Denemy. I am writing to you today in reference to House Bill 122 dealing with the Alaska Film Tax Credits. I am curious that the subject is once again being broached as we have set our business plan to correspond with the passing of the previous bill on tax credits, and it certainly delivers a red flag to the industry as a whole about shooting in Alaska. The subject of controversy seems to arise from the mistaken belief that the tax credits and incentives are being used to pay the salaries of actors from outside of Alaska, creating a campaign that states, why should Alaska taxpayers pay the salary of rich Hollywood stars? This argument has as much credibility as stating why there being any incentive programs for the oil and gas business in Alaska. These incentives just go to pay the salaries of rich oil and gas executives. This would seem a strange statement, as the oil and gas industry is a multi-billion dollar industry creating thousands of jobs across the state. Given the opportunity, the film and television industry could also be creating a myriad of opportunities not only in the film and television business, but also in related ancillary businesses. This includes shipping, catering, the hospitality industry, construction, transportation, and most importantly, tourism. The best example of how this industry can affect a region is from my home province of British Columbia. Utilizing a diverse landscape and strong tax credits. Sound familiar? British Columbia transformed itself to the point that film and television is now one of our biggest industries. When you add in the tourism that was created as a result of this, you can see how this industry has been a tremendous boon to the overall economy of British Columbia. The challenge is that most producers have no idea of the diversity of landscapes that Alaska has to offer. Unfortunately, most of the shows shot in Alaska show the state as inhospitable tundra. We've had producers in LA tell us that they have no winter scenes in their film, so why should they shoot in Alaska? We, of course, calmly explain that Alaska does indeed have summer, show them pictures of the incredible scenery, and mention that in certain places, they can virtually shoot around the clock if there is virtually no night. Now that gets their attention. The challenge is that Alaska has created this tremendous tax credit that has the potential to create a whole new industry for the state and done absolutely nothing to promote it. The potential is there. The template from BC is there, yet the only thing being created is uncertainty and unease from producers when they see bills such as this being revisited. The key to making this work is less bureaucrats and more salespeople. Anchorage is ideally situated 6 hours from LA and 6 hours from London, England. Alaska should be actively promoting to producers worldwide and attending different film festivals such as MIPCOM and MAPSI. My partner, Amy Gardner, and I have been promoting Alaska ourselves, international producers, and we'd be more than happy to work with the state in this regard. The second part of this equation is building the infrastructure of talent to attract production. This means creating jobs. For our part, we are creating a film institute to help train Alaskans, especially first Alaskans in the film industry. We would be happy to have discussions on how we can all work together to accomplish this. By following through on this, we are now creating jobs for Alaskans. The last point I wish to comment on is likely is the most important, and that is tourism. I'm not privy to the statistics, nor do I feel that they can be accurately predicted, but I'm going to guess that Alaskan-based shows have created a tremendous boost to tourism and tourism-based businesses. Other states with strong film tax credits, such as Louisiana and New Mexico, have also seen a growth to their tourism.
Can you wrap it up, Ms. Bedard?
Pardon me?
Could you wrap it up? We've got a number of people left that we'd like to get to today.
Speaking for ourselves, we have a slate of shows that will highlight Alaska in the most positive light. Confidentially, the key to building this industry in Alaska is commitment, training, cooperation between those with a vested interest, and a sustained promotional program. As a personal note, I would also like to add that the state is a strong promoter and ambassador in Ms. Irene Bedard. She is the one who convinced me to open our production company in Alaska. She not only believes in the incredible potential of the state, but wanted to help create something beautiful and meaningful in the place she calls home. And I will leave you with that.
Thank you very much. Frances Cheever, are you with us?
Can you hear me, sir?
Yes. Thank you for joining us today. Please state your name and affiliation for the record. And if you could keep it relatively short, we'll be able to get to some other people.
I'll speak quickly, sir. I am Major Frances A. Cheever, U.S. Army Nurse Corps retired. My written testimony should be available to you. I recently retired after almost 32 years of service. Most of my time is spent at Walter Reed Army Medical Center caring for our wounded warriors and their families. I am passionate about telling the stories of our American heroes, and I truly believe that the stories about and by our American heroes through film and television can entertain, educate, and heal America. As a screenwriter and member of Veterans in Film and Television, I believe I can do just this. I, in particular, with my script 13 Packs, pitched as MASH meets Behind Enemy Lines. It's a high-stakes, contemporary military page-turner that takes the audience to one of the military's far-reaching power projection platforms, Alaska. Essential to saving lives and mission success is the unique skill set of the 13 Packs team, a motley crew of adrenaline junkies, men and women, who have proven their mettle as the premier combat medical, a ready medical team. Last year, I visited Alaska for the first time. After spending only a week with my friends at their home in Anchorage, I fell in love with Alaska, so much so that I made the bold move to changed the setting of my feature film, 13 Packs, to Alaska, and decided to write an entire sequel, 13 Packs Derailed, set in Whittier, making Alaska a central character, showcasing its beautiful scenery, history, and the people of Alaska, to include our servicemen and women. While in Alaska, I spent time with Major Guy Hayes, Alaska's National Guard public affairs officer, and the 212th Rescue Squadron commander, Major Joe Conroy. Conroy, the 212th is located at the Joint Base Elmendorf Richardson in Alaska. They're very excited to have 13 Packs come to Alaska. Having all the ingredients of a high-concept feature film with sequel and or episodic television potential, 13 Packs has generated interest in Hollywood. It's currently under consideration for optioning by some very big Hollywood hitters. What has contributed to making 13 Packs a more attractive venture is the Alaskan Film Tax Incentive Program, enthusiastic tax credit buyers. Furthermore, and I'll make it brief, the OCPA LA, which is the Chief of Public Affairs for the U.S. Army, has already written a letter of encouragement for 13 Packs and endorses it as a script being in concert with Army values and will, with funding and DOD production assistance agreement, is secured, the Department of Defense is inclined to support the production. Having military assets readily available at Elmendorf and the support from PAO makes Alaska an even more attractive setting. I am currently working with Alaska-based production company Sprocket Heads. We anticipate hundreds of local hires, including experienced local crew members, Alaska servicemen and women, and veterans and their families, all of whom will enjoy ongoing profitable work. House Bill 112 could halt the potential future to film 13 Packs, its sequel and or potential episodic series, and other feature films and television series in Alaska. I ask that you please support the Alaska Film Incentive Program and honor your commitment to keep it going to 2023, giving opportunity for feature film projects like mine to become a reality and turn all that glitters into new Alaska gold. Thank you for your time and consideration.
Thank you very much. Kelly Bender, are you with us, Kelly?
Yes. Can you hear me?
Yeah. Thank you for joining us today. Please state your name and affiliation for the record.
My name is Kelly Bender, and I'm owner of Lazy Otter Charters in Whittier, Alaska. I'm here just representing our company. We do water taxi and sightseeing and have a coffee shop in Whittier, Alaska. Not directly affiliated with the film industry. I'm just a local business that has benefited from the industry. We have provided, the industry has provided business opportunities directly. We have actually taken out film productions on our boats, productions that are currently airing. But we've also indirectly had business opportunities by taking out crew and cast on sightseeing tours. For us, it's not a huge, for $12,000, $15,000 in the last couple of years is what it's provided our business. But that usually happens in the shoulder season. And we are a small mom-and-pop operation. My family is supported by this business. But we also hire local Alaskans that live in their communities that we operate in. By providing this business in the shoulder season, we're able to offer payroll to these people who live in our communities. The state often supports industries with finite resources. But here is your opportunity to support an industry that has infinite reach. Big population, many different kinds of businesses, tourism, resources, and to really help support small community-based businesses and industries. So I just am here to kind of help that you'll understand that this is much farther reaching than just Hollywood types. This really does support many, many businesses and people in our state. Thank you for the opportunity.
Thank you very much. Gary Zimmerman.
Hello, thank you, Chairman Olson and Labor and Commerce Committee members. My name is Gary Zimmerman. I'm the General Manager for Alaska Rent-A-Car, Inc. We're a locally owned, employee-owned licensee of the Avis Rent-A-Car system. Have been operating in Alaska since 1955. We operate in a dozen locations throughout Alaska and have approximately 100 full-time employees. I represent a company that, although not directly involved in actual film production, we benefit from the increased activity that this industry brings to Alaska. There's a huge economic benefit that is felt throughout Alaska from film production dollars spent here. Some of it is as general as increased businesses or increased business to hundreds of companies. Some of it's as specific as direct wages to Alaskans, and some benefits that are very near and dear to us, increased revenues that go back to the state and other local governments. I work in just one specific service industry that generates over $22 million in actual taxes and fees that we collect from our renters and pay to state and local governments. Like hotel bed taxes, various car rental taxes, general sales taxes, when our receipts go up due to increased business activity, so does governmental agencies. Another positive aspect about the film industry is that the state of Alaska could not pay for the promotion of or throw enough marketing dollars to match the advertising or face time that occurs when these productions feature Alaska. This increased awareness helps further the state's goal of promoting tourism and aiding that industry. When tourists are thinking about where to spend their vacation dollars, Alaska, through increased top-of-mind awareness, will surely rank high on their list. The film industry is just beginning to get traction in Alaska, with companies investing in people, training, facilities, and equipment. House Bill 112 will effectively kill this industry and the companies that are working very hard to help diversify Alaska's economy. I would ask that the Labor and Commerce Committee members look at the title of their committee and do what they can to promote labor and commerce in Alaska by voting against House Bill 112. Thank you for your time today.
Thank you very much. It is now 5 o'clock, and I'm not going to gavel out. I am going to recess this meeting until Wednesday at 3:15, where we will take up with the continuation and hopefully wrap up on House Bill 112. And with that, we're in recess.